have an AA meeting. My name is Misty, and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday 8 p.m. Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual and their own personal stories describe in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened to their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight's speaker is Bill D. from the 7:30 Daily Early Morning Study Group here at NABA.
I'm all excited.
Hi, guys. I am Bill Dillon, and I am an alcoholic. And I haven't done this in a long time, so I had to, like, take notes. I know what not to say, and I got to have dinner with some friends beforehand, and we agreed on some of the stories that I would leave out. So even sober, some of my stories I have to leave out. So yeah, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Now I am a 62-year-old recovering alcoholic with 45 years of sobriety. I have three kids, one wife of 30 years, no arrests or fist fights since I got sober. I don't think I've been fired since I got sober either. Okay. I have a bunch of friends here tonight to support me, and that feels really good. When I was drinking, that never happened. When I was drinking, I never got invited back anywhere. Okay? I might get invited somewhere, but I never got invited back. When I came into AA, I was 17 years old. And I was a 129-pound, angry, soaking wet, furious, resentful young man. And I had to go to these meetings and get my slip signed. And I hated you people. I didn't want what you had. I wanted your signature, and I wanted you to leave me alone. And as soon as I could get done, you know, I wanted to get out of here. That was plan A. And after about 90 days of going to meetings and really, really being not a positive influence in the meetings, there was this old French guy. I got sober down in Louisiana. So Louisiana, the drinking age is about 11. I didn't start drinking until I was 12. Okay? So I grew up in a Catholic family with seven kids. And my father was a raging, violent alcoholic. And my mother did what she could to take care of the kids. And I was the sixth of seven. And so by the time I was 12, I had started drinking, of course, because it was Louisiana. By the time I was 14, I was drinking regularly. And by the time I was 16, I had a job and was working 30 hours a week and had a car and spent every dime I made on beer and cigarettes. And I realized at that point that as long as I didn't stay out too late, I wouldn't get in trouble at home. And because we had seven kids and nobody was doing a bed count, too late was breakfast time. And so as long as I got in before everybody woke up for breakfast, I was going to be okay. Now, I wasn't exactly a successful student in high school. I'm just going to say that right now. They had people that were voted most likely to succeed, and I was not that person. In fact, I was voted least likely to live to be 21, and I'm glad to know that I've surpassed that mark now. I'm well past 21. I like to say that my routine today is I like to hit the gym 4 days a week, and I like to hit AA meetings 2 or 3 days a week. And every day of the week, I read a few pages out of the Big Book of the 12 and 12. Now, I go to the gym because I don't want to get old and grumpy and bent over and sick. But I read the book every day because I got to stay in fit spiritual condition. And that's my main job, is to be in fit spiritual condition. Because if I don't do that, all the rest of it's going to be gone. And I know that because I've been coming to these meetings for years and watching people get sober and have great lives. This guy right here, he's having a great life. When he came in a year ago, not so hot. This is a room full of miracles. And that's why I come, because I like to see miracles. And that's why I'm here tonight, because this is a room full of miracles. This is a room full of people. This is a room full of women that are supposed to be dead. And you got a second shot at it. And then you got to ask yourself, why do I have a second shot at it? Is there work I got to do? And I am convinced that the only reason I'm still alive, the only reason that God didn't give me a pink slip, is because every now and then I do good work with some drunk. And he says, well, all right, we'll give him another day. Because that's my main work. And it still is today. So as I was saying, I grew up in Louisiana and I was drinking a lot. And my father was a violent drunk. And I never knew the reason for his violence because I never saw him drinking. Never drank at home. But he would come home violent. And when I was 12, my mom sat me down and she explained he was an alcoholic. And I can still remember crying because it answered so much about the insanity in our household. Because I never understood why things were the way they were. And so when I was 12 years old, I started going to Alateen meetings. And it's about the time I also started drinking. In fact, I also started drinking with a lot of the kids in Alateen because they were predisposed to alcoholism, much as myself. My father was a Wildcat oil man. And so he would drill oil wells in Louisiana. And if the well hit, then he was like a millionaire for a year. And if the well didn't hit, then we all got our clothes from the Salvation Army and got our food from the food banks. And nobody ever explained that to me. And so growing up, we lived in this boom or bust scenario. And I never knew whether or not we were going to have groceries or clothes or really anything in the house. And so I, like each of my brothers and sisters, had to learn to be self-reliant. Now, I thought that was a great thing because when I got here, I had great survival skills. But today, I want to do more than survive. Today, I want to thrive. And so I really had to recognize that those survival skills were fine and they got me here, but I had to get better tools. And the tool set in this room is hanging on the wall back there. Those 12 steps are the tool set for living your life. And not you can get by and you can survive. You can have the kind of life you want to have. And that's why I'm here tonight. That's why this is a room full of miracles. Is because we get to pick how we're going to live. And when I came in here, I thought maybe I could get a job as an auto mechanic somewhere. Maybe I could join the service. Service wouldn't have me. But I managed to squeak my way into a college in my little hometown. Started waiting tables and doing construction work in the summertime. And I got through college and I stayed sober. That was the first 4 years. But let me tell you what really happened the first year. Because the first year, I didn't want to work steps. I didn't want to do anything but get my little slip sign. And after about 90 days, there was a little French guy named Ronnie in my home group. And he pulled me aside one night and he said, Little Billy, they call me Little Billy because I was so small. Little Billy, do you like Jack Daniels? Yeah. I said, yeah, I like Jack Daniels. And I thought he was going to buy me a drink. And he said, go to Cass's Liquor Store down the street and buy yourself a fifth of Jack Daniels. He had my attention. The first time I liked what somebody had to say in the meetings. He said, go home and pour yourself a shot. And the next day, pour yourself another shot. And the day after that, have a shot. And you drink one shot of that liquor every day to the end of the month. He said, and if there's anything left in that bottle, drink two. Celebrate, because you don't have a problem. I stuck the key in my ignition. And I'm sitting there in the car, and Cassis is just like 2 blocks away. And I'm like, you know, I knew that I could buy a fifth of Jack Daniels and just throw it in the trunk of the car and never touch it and drive around with it for a month and it'd be fine. But I knew as soon as I broke the seal on that bottle, I couldn't guarantee you how much I was going to drink. And 45 years later, if I had a fifth of Jack Daniels, I would not break the seal on that bottle. I could not pass that take a drink test. I am certain. And I've been to enough AA funerals that I know the people who have what Bill Dylan has, they don't live long if they take that drink. Now, I don't live in fear of alcohol because the compulsion to drink has been removed. And so if I have a good reason, I go to cocktail parties. I go to bars. I go to concerts. I can go anywhere on this planet that I want to go as long as I'm in fit spiritual condition and I have a reason to be there. And if I'm not, I don't go. Now, the last time I wanted to drink was in 1980. And I was at the World AA Convention in New Orleans, Louisiana. And I was sitting in the top row of the Superdome. I'd gotten separated from my sponsor and the group of people I'd come with. I came with a bunch of people and I got separated. And I'm sitting in the top row by myself, and I'm listening to the keynote speaker, and I'm going, this is just total bullshit. This is just not working. I had been to rehabs. Years sober, I had been to rehab. They kicked me out of rehab. Even with insurance, they kicked me out of rehab. They said that I was ruining it for everybody else. There was nothing they could do for me. And so the gates of hell are clanging shut, and I go to this convention, and I get cut off from my people, and I'm sitting in the top, and it's like, you know what? I am done. This has been a wasted year of my life. I knew where to go in New Orleans. I had $5 in my wallet, but I knew where I could get drunk on $5 in New Orleans because I'd done it before. And so I'm in the top of the Superdome, though, so like every SOB's got to leave before I can get out the door. So I'm angry. That was my normal state of mind. I was angry. And I throw open the door of the Superdome, and there stands my sponsor and his wife. 50,000 drunks, and there stands my sponsor and his wife. Now, that was the first, just can't deny it, this is an AA miracle. The only guy that was going to be between me and getting drunk was that guy. And years later, I got to be that guy for somebody else. I won't tell you that story because we don't have all night. But that was enough. And Mike was a hell of a sponsor. Mike had done the steps. My first sponsor had not done the steps. And so we were kind of trying to work through the program together. And I'll tell you, if you get a sponsor who hadn't worked the steps, you're just kind of wasting your time. There's a lot of people in this room that have worked the steps. This old guy with the beard, he's a step worker. And these women over here that are all sitting here smiling, they work the steps. And after the meeting, if you talk to them and you get their phone number, they'll be glad to talk to you about how they work the steps. Now, all these guys over here, don't even talk to them. Don't get their phone numbers. Don't talk to me after the meeting. Just kind of know. But Mike knew that I hadn't worked the steps. And I thought I had done everything right because I was just a cocky young guy and really way too full of myself. Still am, but it's getting better. So Mike sits me down and he's like, well, you need to do a 4-step inventory. I'm like, well, I've done 2 of them already. They were horrible. All right, they were horrible because they were too long and they were too complicated. But Mike was a really smart guy. And so Mike said, you need a cheat sheet. I'm like, what are you talking about? He said, you go to the 10th step. The 10th step is the cheat sheet to the 4th step. Well, I had no idea. But I liked the cheat sheet because that was the only way I even got out of high school. So I said, well, what are you talking about? He took me to the book. See, I brought this up here. because in case I run out of stuff to say, I can just read from the book and I know it'll be right. But here, on page 84 in the big book, is the 10th step. And in the 10th step, in the middle of page 84, right there where the words are, and I had read the words, the 10th step says, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Okay? He said the key word here is continue, because that relates back to the 4th step. And he says, Bill, you only have 4 character defects. Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And so what you're going to do is you're going to go home and get 4 sheets of paper, and you're going to write selfishness on the top of the first one, and then dishonesty, and then resentment, and fear. And then you're just going to go down and fill in each of those 4 pages. And then when you get done with that, you get out to 12 and 12. And the 12 and 12, 12 and 12 is a brilliant book. You should get a copy of that, Drew. The 12 and 12 talks about how we have 3 instincts that lead us astray. Sex, security, and society. And so he let me get 3 more sheets of paper and write sex, security, and society on each of those 3 pages. And then fill out my little lists. Now, honestly, the 4 character defects and the 3 instincts all had the same stuff on them. It was like they were a little cross-indexed. But that let me see the patterns. And my resentments were the same. They fell into the same groove every time. Every boss, every teacher, every parent, every relationship that there was a power play in fell into the same sorts of resentment patterns time after time after time. Every sex relationship that I ever had, the same problems over and over again. It was just different hair colors. That was about it. And it was the same with my dishonesty and my fear. I had so many fears that were unnatural fears and I didn't even realize it. And you know, I still have 4 character defects today. I can get out my inventory. I take an inventory every 2 years. I could get out my inventory and look at it today, and it would still have those 4 character defects. The manifestations are a little different than they used to be, but they're still there. Because we make progress here, we don't make perfection. None of us make saints. After 4 years, I wasn't a saint. After 8, not a saint. 16, nope. 32, nope. 45, not even close. My wife of 30 years is not here tonight because she would stand up and go, oh, hell yeah, amen, I'll tell you right now, he's a bastard. And if you give me 5 minutes, I'll tell you why he's so bad. So I told her, stay home. I would feel self-conscious, I think, was the word I said. She's like, well, I would come. I said, yeah, you would. You'd be talking about it. So skip around a little bit. I want to talk about the first AA miracle that I had. And the first AA miracle that I had, well, yeah, it was the first AA miracle I ever had. And I had an older brother, 8 years older than me. His name was John. And John was in law school. I was a senior in high school, and John was halfway through law school. John comes home one afternoon, and the dean of the law school at LSU has disinvited him from further attending classes. And John explains to me that he has been drinking blackout drunk for years and starts going through all of his behavior and stuff. And I'm listening to him, and he's going to AA meetings. And I'm listening to him tell me his stories, and it's exactly like my stories. It's just that he's been doing it for 8 more years than I have. So I made a decision at that point that I was not going to end up like him in these damn AA meetings. And I was going to control my drinking because I knew that I wasn't going to end up here. And so so I controlled it for a whole weekend. I didn't. I was highly successful that one weekend. But then I went back for more. And during the next 90 days, of controlled drinking, I got into a gunfight with some people that But what, it was actually more of a fist fight than it. I had a gun. They had a big fist. I was really drunk. He took away my gun. The police came. I outran the police. And I felt like that was really a successful evening. But you see, what had happened is, have you ever been to Mardi Gras? If you've ever been too drunk to participate in Mardi Gras, you might have an alcohol problem. I'm just going to say that right now. So I had gotten to the point where I was too drunk to continue further in Mardi Gras. And so I had a rule that assured that my drinking was responsible. And my rule was, if I could no longer walk or sit in a chair, it was time to get in my car and drive home. And so I was driving home in the rain in the afternoon of Mardi Gras, and I get sideswiped by another car. And the operator of the other car was Officer Green. And he was in his own car, and apparently Officer Green was even more overserved than I was, because he did not want to give me a ticket. He just wanted me not to call his supervisor, which I was willing to do, because that would have been other law enforcement, and I felt certain that I would not succeed on a sobriety test. So we traded numbers, and he agreed to fix my car. And of course, once he got sober, he disagreed to fix my car. And you know, I'm a 17-year-old kid. This car is my, this is hot rod of them. This junker that barely runs, but it's very important to me. So I filed a lawsuit against this police officer, and I served him papers at shift change at the police station. If you have to walk on thin ice, you might as well dance, you know? So I sued him for this $1,000 fender bender. And after the fist fight, gunfight, unpleasantness, where I got disarmed and the police chased me, well, that was on Saturday night. Now, on Monday night, I was due to appear in court because I had this lawsuit against Officer Green. And got to appear in front of Judge Saloom. And I don't know if you've ever been in front of Judge Saloom or not, but, well, Judge Saloom and I, we went way back. I had been in front of him several times. And he let me present all my evidence, and then he asked Officer Green what he had to say, and Officer Green said, I got nothing to say. So he said, we're going to recess for 10 minutes and see if you guys can work it out. Officer Green puts his feet up on the little desk, and he cleans his nails for 10 minutes. Doesn't say a word. Then the bailiff knocks on the door, letting us know that the judge wants us to come back in. Officer Green folded up his little knife, and he looked at me, and he said, I heard you dropped your gun the other night. So we settled that case. We settled it, although I still got $200 out of him just on general principle, although I got a lot of tickets after that, too. See, now, one of the things that I had done when I was drinking was I got a job at the donut shop in my town. And so I was working nights and weekends making donuts, but that assured me that I knew every police officer in my hometown. So when I would get stopped on the side of the road, they would take me home. And that worked really well for a while. But after I sued Officer Green, it didn't work so good. Now, the last night that I got drunk, see, I was just having fun, right? The last night that I got drunk, I crossed the center line on the main drag in my little hometown, and I hit another car going 50 miles an hour head on. And nobody had seat belts, nobody had airbags, and everybody ended up going to the hospital except for me. I went home. And it was the first AA miracle. Because my brother, who was then sober 90 days, was at the house. And I walked in and I said, everything's fine, everything's fine. And I had blood all over my shirt and I didn't even realize that I had glass all in my head. But I was in a blackout. And so I sat down with my brother, who had just told me about all his drinking behavior. And I unloaded on him all of my drinking behavior. And basically spent 2 hours explaining everything that had happened during my drinking career. Now, I didn't believe in God at the time. but it did believe in catch 22. Okay, now, if you spend 2 hours discussing your alcoholism with somebody and you're in a blackout for that whole 2 hours, you've got a problem with alcohol. And my brother wrote me this long letter. I still have the letter. He wrote me this long letter laying out everything that I had told to him. And I got it in the mail like a week later. And I didn't remember even talking to him that night. I didn't remember him being home that night. But because I had this letter, I knew that I had told him all these things. And so I knew that I had to come to the meetings. Well, the judge also made me go to the meetings. But I knew that I at least needed to go and listen. And that was the first AA miracle that really happened in my life. Because there was no denying that I had a problem with alcohol. It just wasn't as bad as you guys. You guys had a real problem. So I came to the meetings. I didn't buy the liquor that Ronnie suggested. And I went to the World Convention, and I didn't drink then either. But I did work the steps. I did do the inventory. And I did have a fifth step with my sponsor. My fifth step with my sponsor took about an hour. And it's because it was really simple. It was really easy to see the patterns in my life that occurred over and over again. And it still is. And when I sit down with my sponsor now and I go through a fifth step inventory with him, it takes about an hour. And I walk away feeling peaceful and content. And if you get that feeling of contented usefulness, then your recovery's going well. Because that's really what we're here for. We're here so that when we're walking around, we feel a peaceful contentedness in our life. And that's not one of the promises, but that is what happens. You know, and you can look around the room at the people that have a little twinkle in their eye. You're one of them. You know, content and comfortable in your skin. And that's a great way to live. Now, I didn't have that for the first couple of years. Once I got a good sponsor and I started working my way through the steps, then things got better. And I no longer lived with the four horsemen. Terror, frustration, bewilderment, and despair. Because when I came in and I saw that part in the big book, it was like, damn, these people have been reading my mail. We didn't have email back then. We just had mail. And so I didn't drink. I didn't drink at the convention. Started working those little steps. But I didn't believe that God was on my team. That was really the big problem for me. How do you come to believe if you're angry agnostic? And so, instead of going to church every Sunday, which was kind of how I was brought up, I would go to the park every Sunday. And I would sit down in a quiet place, a meditative spot, and then I would curse at God for an hour about all the bad things that had happened in my life. I'd been born in this alcoholic household and had this terrible car wreck and had this big lawsuit over the terrible car wreck, and the police were on me. Even sober, they were on me all the time now. Couldn't turn around. Couldn't stay in school, quit college, had to go back, worked offshore for a while, got run off of the boats. My life was not pleasant. I had a whole lot of jobs where I got run off either for being drunk the last year I drank or being poorly sober the first year I was dry. And so I would cuss at God for an hour. And after doing that for a couple of months, I started realizing that a lot of the bad things that were happening in my life were as a direct result of decisions that I was making. And it wasn't the weather. It wasn't some cosmic thing that was going on. It was Bill Dillon doing things that was inhibiting the things that I said that I wanted. I wanted to succeed in school, but I didn't want to read the books. And I wanted to keep a job, but I didn't want to show up for my shift. You know, I wanted to have a nice car, but I didn't want to pay for the oil. And you got to do the maintenance on all those things. I wanted to have a nice relationship with a girlfriend, but I didn't want to be worth a shit. you. There's a lot of that going around with guys. I'll just tell you right now. And then I started getting really clear that, you know, actually, God had kind of dealt me a pretty decent set of cards. That I had it a lot easier than a lot of my brothers and sisters did. And I had it a lot easier than a lot of people in the rooms did. Because I was healthy and I could pretty much do what I wanted to do. And I saw people that were starting to have fun and enjoy their sobriety. People like Henry back there that would have a chip on their shoulders for a year, and then suddenly they're smiling and laughing everywhere they go, and you go, damn, I want what Henry's got. I don't know how he does it. And then I would get with Henry, and I would have a cup of coffee after the meeting, and Henry would be glad to tell me how he does it. And I would go, well, you know, I'm going to try some of Henry's stuff. And I made a few friends like that when I first got sober. We've got a whole group of people over here that have 2 years of sobriety. And the people that I got sober with, they all have 45 years of sobriety now. They're some old suckers. But they're having successful lives because they're getting to do the things they want to do. And all the people over here with 2 years of sobriety, raise your hands over here, the two-year club. Come on, Drew, you're just a latecomer. You're in it. Come on. These are the guys that have got what you want. And they had the same disease that you have when they walked in, but they found the solution and they're working the steps. And when you come to the middle steps, you come to the sixth and seventh, and you start talking about the willingness to have God remove these defects. It's like, well, shit, I don't want that. You know? Dishonesty? Come on, I'm a lawyer. I got an E here, all right? Can't be having that. That's just terrible. Resentments for what I fed on. Now, the one thing that I want to talk about, because this is really, really important to me, and probably some of you guys have this too. I know some of the guys have this. Is I came in, and fear was on the list, and I thought I had some. And I'm like, well, where's anger? And so I went to my sponsor, and I'm like, I need another sheet of paper here, because I'm really angry. And he said, no, Bill, you're really not. You're frustrated. But really what you are is fearful. You have a lot of fear, but you've covered it with anger, because that's socially acceptable for a guy. And so you can have these violent rages and all this and blow up, but really you're just scared you're not going to get what you want. And if you write down on your resentment page, you start looking at that, you're going to see that that's where a lot of your fears are. You fear that you're not going to get what Bill wants. And I still have that. To this day, I confuse my fear and my anger with my resentment. And the book talks about it so well. It talks about how self-centered fear is the root of our problem. It's the root of my problem. I don't know about the rest of you guys. Bill Wilson seemed to nail it on the head when he wrote that book. But this is the root of my problem. And when I recognize that, then I have a starting place to work. And when I came in here, I wasn't a bad guy trying to get good. I was just a sick guy trying to recover. And I'm still just a guy trying to recover. I didn't come here to get saved. I came in here to save my ass. Because there was no other choice. This was the place that if I followed the steps, I could live through it. And my father, who I mentioned earlier, was a violent alcoholic. He had been sober when I was like a young boy. And he had like 4 years of sobriety from the time I was six until I was 10. And then he started making money. And he decided that he had this thing. And he didn't need AA anymore. And from the time I was 10 until the time he died, he never drew another sober breath. So I've been sober about 5 years. I spent the weekend with my dad, and I was talking to him about going to an AA meeting because his wife was, you know, getting cirrhosis, and he was having heart problems, and looked like he wasn't going to live a real long time. And didn't want to talk about going to the meetings. He didn't want to talk about recovery. And he looked me in the eyes. He's hugging me as I'm leaving, and he said, "I'm just not ready yet." Now, there's a three-letter word that really is the center of this whole program. And that three-letter word is not God. That word is yet. And there's a lot of young people in this group here. Not so much over here, but here. There's a lot of young people, and you're sitting there going, "Well, it hadn't gotten that bad yet." And if you wait, and if you keep doing what I was doing, it'll get bad pretty quick. And a smart person, most people learn from their mistakes. But a smart person is going to learn from the mistakes of others. And so that's why we get phone numbers from these people. Because when you look around the room and you say, "Well, I want what she's got." And you get her phone number, and then you find out how she did it. You can do the same thing. Because the stuff on the wall is actually literally how it works, but the people in the chairs know how to make it work. And you may listen to me and go, "Well, you know, that guy might have said a few things." But after the meeting, if you get with somebody, in just 5 minutes, just tell me how you did it. Tell me, how do you scrape together a year of sobriety? You know, they're going to be able to tell you. You know, you go to meetings. They read the book. Pray and meditate a little bit every day. You know, I just pray and meditate a little bit every day. I read 2 or 3 pages out of the book. I'm not bright enough to take in more than that anyway. And then I sit quietly with my eyes closed for 10 minutes. And if I sit quietly with my eyes closed for 10 minutes, and then when I'm done, I go, "God, give me strength and guidance today. Let me see your will, and let me do your will." And then I walk out the door, I am going to have a good day. Guaranteed. And I will stay sober. Guaranteed. And it's been working for 45 years that way. And I was not good at this when I got here, I want to tell you right now. My brother, John, the one I was telling you about, my little AA miracle, I had about 10 months dry time, and then I found out that son of a gun had bet $20 with one of his friends that I was never going to make it a year. I stayed sober out of spite the last 2 months of that year. And then the next year I said, "Hey, let's go double or nothing." And you know what? If you take $20 and you do double or nothing for 45 years, he owes me a lot of money. A lot of money. But, you know, we're still close. And I see him 3 or 4 times a week. And my first sponsor, the one that never worked the steps, he's finally worked the steps. He was the best man at my wedding. And I still hang out with that guy. He's still a knucklehead. Great guy. And all the people I got sober with, my sponsors, 80 years old, sharp as a tack. Still working the steps, still going to meet. 47, 48 years of sobriety. It is a day at a time. And it is not, I don't have anything more than the guy that's worked the steps and been doing this a year. I've just been doing it longer. And some days I'm in really good fit spiritual conditions, and other days I am self-centered and angry and fearful, and I got to sit down for 30 minutes just to quiet my mind because I'm totally insane again. And the people from my home group know that because I share it with them often. But see, that's the thing. Is that I don't have to come in and be a saint. I just got to be Bill. I got to be honest. And learning how to be honest with Bill is the key. Now, I'm still a bullshitter. So I got a sponsor. I got a sponsor who I trust. And I'm pointing to you because, you know, see, you're the old bearded guy. And you'd be... Good to see you. But I have to have that because I am not a good judge of my own spiritual condition. And so we have sponsors in here, we have the steps in here, we have the meetings. And if you go to the same meeting week after week, people will get to know you, and they'll call you on your shit, which is why home groups are so important. And we do all these things, and it's not for money, it's not for fame. It's because we kind of like to see people live through this thing and have a good life. And if you decide you want to get sober, that's great. If you don't, that's great too. I have been to a lot of funerals, and I carry those stories. You know, the first Thanksgiving, I hated Thanksgiving when I first got sober. Absolutely hated it. My family, when they all got together, it was not pretty. I went to detox, and I checked out a drunk. In my little town, you could check out a drunk from detox and take him to a meet. Took this guy to a meeting, and he had had DTs twice. Doctors told him, you're probably not going to have DTs three times and live through it. And I bought him some cigarettes, and we had a little lunch and did this. And 2 weeks later, this guy was dead on the train tracks. Now, I don't even remember his name, but I still carry that guy because I know that that's what's waiting for me. Or I can do the maintenance. And thank goodness I've continued to do the maintenance, and you guys are part of it. You know, I love the opportunity to do this every couple of years because it just makes me sit down and realize all the things I'm grateful for and all the things I can't share in public. I had my little sounding board earlier saying, oh, I'm going to drop the story with the goat. I'm going to... All of that stuff. But if you do this, you can have the life you want. If you do the four-step inventory, you can decide what it is you want to do with your life. Now, you're not going to get to be an astronaut, but you can have a loving relationship with a spouse, or you can have children, and you can have a job, or you can travel the world, or you can be a chef. You can do whatever it is you want to do as long as you're willing to pay the price. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much, Bill. That was amazing. I absolutely love how you incorporated humor into the realness of your story. That was spot on. We've voluntold Jonathan to come out and hand the chips out.
Thank you. Hey, I'm Jonathan. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, everyone. Journey starts off with this white chip right here. Start this way of life. Come back to that. This one is a silver chip for 30 days and 30 nights. It has a camel on this one. I've been told that's because the camel can go 30 days without a drink and gets on its knees twice a day. Anyone for a 30-day chip? This group gives out a 2-month chip. It's a nice bronzy gold 2 months.
Thank you. thirsty. What you see is my heart bleeding. I'm better from the sun I'll never see. I'm a victim of life's circumstances. I take every pill from A to Z. I try to blot it out. That feeling of self-doubt. It's the Bible, the book, or the gun for me. It's the Bible, the book, or the gun for me.